As we enter the final week leading up to the Pennsylvania primary, candidates are flocking to the Keystone State. I'm Dave Heller, and this is NewsWorks Tonight. Hillary Clinton is campaigning in Philadelphia today, meeting at a church with former U.S. Attorney General Eric Holder and mothers of crime victims. WHYY's Dave Davies was there.
A little later, Hillary Clinton will lead a campaign rally in Fishtown, but first, an emotional encounter with relatives of victims of gun violence at the St. Paul Baptist Church at 10th and Wallace. Former Attorney General Eric Holder also in attendance here, as was Geneva Reed Veal, mother of the woman who was found hanged in her cell after being arrested at a Texas traffic stop. Clinton, whose voice seemed a bit strained, noted that 12 people were shot in Philadelphia over the weekend. She said it's not enough to identify problems such as mass incarceration, lapses in police accountability, and gun violence, but to craft solutions that will make a difference. Reporting from North Philadelphia, I'm Dave Davies, WHYY News.
In next Tuesday's Democratic primary, Philadelphia Congressman Chaka Fattah will have to defend his seat for the first time in two decades. Federal corruption charges have damaged his reputation and brought three challengers into the race. State Representative Dwight Evans, Philadelphia Ward Leader Dan Muroff, and Lower Merion Township Commissioner Brian Gordon. Fattah says he's confident of acquittal at trial and victory at the polls because voters know his record. WHYY's Aaron Mosell reports.
Fattah has led the 2nd Congressional District since 1995. Since then, he says he sent billions back home through legislation and earmarks.
There are projects in housing, in transportation, in education. There are tax cuts. This is spending via the tax code, right? But it is spending nonetheless. There are dozens of projects through SEPTA or PennDOT.
Between 2008 and 2010, Fattah racked up 72 earmarks totaling nearly $75 million. That sounds like a lot of money, but a review of earmark spending by the watchdog group Public Citizens Against Government Waste found Fattah wasn't among Congress's elite performers in bringing back dollars to his district. Tom Schatz is the group's president.
Congressman Fattah was about average. In 2008, fiscal year 2008, he was ranked 236th out of the 435 members of the House. 2009, 229th. But in 2010, he jumped up by almost 100 over that to 130th. So in the third year, when earmarks were being identified and names were attached, he was in the top 150, which would essentially place him in the top third of Congress.
Fattah says he's brought results, and that's why voters have routinely returned him to office with overwhelming margins. This year is different. Voters have to weigh Fattah's record against troubling allegations that he orchestrated the theft of government funds to repay campaign debt. It's why now, more than ever, Fattah is talking up his achievements. On the campaign trail, Fattah often touts a pair of college readiness programs he created, Gear Up and Core Philly, now Core Scholars. Together, the programs represent a roughly $5 billion investment in education.
What I've done with through these programs is take young people who have been written off, and we think we've written them back in. We've given them an opportunity to aspire to and to go to college.
Gear Up is a national program. It stands for Gaining Early Awareness and Readiness for Undergraduate Programs. Ideally, students enroll in middle school and stay in all the way through high school. The program looks to make college a realistic goal and prepare students for the transition, academically, financially, and mentally.
Eighth grade, it was serious, but when we got to high school, like, it was, I wouldn't say constant lectures, but constant reminders that, you know, high school's going to fly by, and it flew by, and, you know, college is going to be waiting for you. Either you're going to get into college or you're going to be just a graduate of high school.
Jason Rodriguez grew up in North Philly and participated in Gear Up through high school. He's now finishing his freshman year at Rutgers University, Camden. He says he still keeps in touch with program leaders. They motivate him to stay on track, to be the first one in his family to go to college and graduate. Since its start in 1999, Fattah says the program has helped more than 12 million students. He's cited that figure at debates and in interviews. but it's not entirely accurate. It comes from adding up the number of students enrolled every year over a long period of time. Since students remain in the program for multiple years, the 12 million figure counts many students multiple times. The U.S. Education Department can't say how many kids were helped overall. That doesn't bother Fatah.
I don't have any quarrel with the number, right? And I'm willing to say that if it's, you know, short by a million or embellished by a million, I'm fine with it. There's nobody in the Congress who sent more kids to college than me.
Core Philly's numbers do check out. The program has provided more than 23,000 seniors so-called last dollar scholarships to help cover first-year college costs at the Community College of Philadelphia and a host of state and state-related schools. But the program isn't without controversy. Most recently, the program was cited in the government's federal racketeering case against Fatah. The indictment alleges that a former CEO of the Educational Advancement Alliance and Fatah congressional staffer used $100,000 intended for Core Philly to help Fatah repay part of an illegal $1 million loan to his failed mayoral campaign in 2007. Here's what Fatah had to say about it.
Hey, how do you elaborate on something that's not true? I don't believe it to be true. I don't think there's any basis for the allegation whatsoever.
Fatah's federal corruption trial is scheduled for mid-May, nearly a month after the Pennsylvania primary. In the meantime, he says voters are more concerned with what he's accomplished in the district and what losing his seniority and a seniority-driven Congress would mean going forward. Given the choice, Fatah says voters will choose him on April 26th. No question. I'm Aaron Moselle, WHYY News.
Now, 6 days out from the election, the on-again, off-again campaign for Pennsylvania Democratic U.S. Senate candidate Joe Vodvarka is on again, thanks to yesterday's ruling by the state Supreme Court. Let's learn more from the Robinson Township resident. That's just outside of Pittsburgh. Joe, thanks for joining us on NewsWorks tonight.
Yes, sir.
Now, I went to your homepage on your website. It says you're the Democratic underdog that the media doesn't want you to hear about. Why do you feel that the media doesn't want to shine a light on your effort?
I feel the same way about fair trade. I'm for fair trade, bringing the jobs back, putting a great big tariff on all these countries that make goods and work for less than a dollar an hour. They ship it into America, and it competes with American labor, and that's what I want to stop.
What do you say, though, to economists and other experts who say that in this global age, that's all but impossible and impractical?
Those are the fat cats talking. They took all our jobs from the past 6 decades. We don't make a bad product. We didn't lose our trade because of bad products. They were just taken away from us, and we never said anything.
Now, to what extent are you speaking from personal experience? I know that you are a semi-retired manufacturer in Robinson Township. What was your product?
My product was custom-made springs. I do a lot of military work, valve springs, instruments, catheters. I do medical, basically make things that most people don't want to make.
Now, have you found that there's been encroaching competition from out of the country?
I used to hire about 10 people, sometime maybe 12. I'm down to my two boys and a part-time worker over here.
Now, given this late Supreme Court decision yesterday, I understand that your name, though, is not appearing on absentee ballots.
My name did appear on absentee ballots, and they sent some kind of paper or something out. Joe Sestak did that to me. He railroaded me on this one. Not this past Monday, but the Monday before, he filed something, a request for relief so the people that got absentee would not vote for me. And this should have never happened.
Take us, if you will, to Robinson Township. Describe the voting electorate there and to what extent your message resonates with them.
Well, in Pittsburgh over here, we know what the loss of jobs is. We know that. Back in the 50s and 60s, if you went to J&L Steel and you wanted to put in an application, they would hand it to you, you'd fill it out, and they wouldn't look at it. They would hire you. There were jobs everywhere. The kids today, the millennial generation, is probably the smartest group of kids this country ever produced, and they can't find jobs. This all has to change, and fair trade would do that.
Joe, the passion you have for your positions is obvious. Let's note that you have not held elected office. And what was your decision-making about making the U.S. Senate your first foray rather than starting, say, as a committeeman or a congressman?
I worked all my life. I put three kids through college. I'm just like all the rest of the guys out there. And I always wanted to do this. I never had the time. And so I made time. I still work. I work every day. We've been on a ballot three times. To go from nothing, no experience, no party backing you, and to get on the ballot in 2010 was an accomplishment. Most people couldn't do it. We did it in 2010, we did it in 2012, and we did it now.
If for some reason the third time is not the charm, do you have a fourth run in you?
My wife, right now, this is my last hurrah. I'm 72, I'm getting older. And she just wants us to fade away together.
Doesn't sound like you're fading away anytime soon, and that's a good thing. Thanks for joining us on Newsworks Tonight.
Okay, thank you, sir. God bless you.
That's Pennsylvania Democratic U.S. Senate candidate Joe Vodvarka. Of course, the election is now 6 days out. You can hear more of our conversation at newsworks.org. Still ahead this evening, students at a local high school learn about the election by channeling the candidates.
Pretty much takes over the entire school. In fact, you walk down the hallway and you hear people say, you know, I'm for Kasich, or where's Bernie Sanders?
Newsworks Tonight continues on WHYY. Welcome back to Newsworks Tonight. I'm Dave Heller. Last Thursday, an unusual email appeared in the inbox of the Verona, New Jersey Police Department. A Chinese student in the United Kingdom had been chatting online with a friend who said she was going to commit suicide. So the student contacted the Verona Police Department. But the woman threatening to end her life was not in the New Jersey suburb. She was a Chinese art student studying in Verona, Italy. WHYY's Joe Hernandez reports on the lengths the determined police chief went to save a life.
Jersey Police Chief Mitchell Stern didn't waste any time. He visited the website of the Verona, Italy police to forward them the email, but didn't have any luck. Then he called the Italian embassy in New York, but they were closed. Finally, he reached Interpol in Washington, D.C.
So ultimately, it was through Interpol in Italy, was disseminated to the Italian state police, who then dispatched police officers and an ambulance. The girl was taken to the hospital and treated.
This wasn't the first time Stern had gotten messages intended for the city in northern Italy where Romeo and Juliet took place.
We must have done a really good job with Google Analytics, because we come up as the top-ranked Verona police if you were to Google Verona police. So I've received emails, actually, regarding Verona, Italy. I've received some for Verona, Wisconsin.
When the Italian police arrived on Thursday, they found the woman with her wrists cut near a bottle of antidepressants. But she survived. A few days later, she wrote Stern an email to thank him.
I am the girl from China who got saved by you, now in Verona, Italy. Though we don't know each other before, you really did help me a lot. I believe there is millions of kind people like you. The lucky thing is I have the chance to write this letter to you and say thank you. No wonder I begin to enjoy everything around me at this moment. Life is brilliant. I appreciate you told me this. Nice meeting you, sir. Can I have your reply back someday, please?
You might say all's well that ends well, but Stern says this story shows that the stigma around mental illness is still present, and it's hurting people who suffer from it.
We see no issue in going to the doctor when we fall down and injure our ankle, or you wake up in the middle of the night with bad abdominal pains. No one has an issue with calling 911. But when, I'll say, somebody's brain hurts, we don't do that.
And he hopes telling this woman's story will help change that. From the New Jersey desk, I'm Joe Hernandez, WHYY News.
As Pennsylvanians prepare to cast ballots in the presidential primary next week, the Republican contest has already been decided. Well, at least in the mock election held by one of the state's best schools. WHYY's Kevin McCrory takes us inside Masterman High, where students put their lives on hold for 1 week to eat, sleep, and breathe as Ted Cruz, John Kasich, and Donald Trump.
They really try to make it all about policy and ideas. But just as in the real presidential race, the one here at Masterman often ends up being about something flimsier. In this case, food.
We had cheese, salsa. But we ran out of meat fairly quickly because people tend to go for the meat.
That's senior Joel Chacko portraying Ted Cruz. Outside of the cafeteria, during the lunch rush, his campaign dished out the Texas senator's foreign policy platform in exchange for free tacos.
So I feel like people actually like really learned something while they were getting their tacos, but at the same time, they were really interested in the food.
It's all a part of what's become a more than 15-year tradition at Masterman. The AP government class chooses a political race and then breaks up into teams. Candidates are chosen, as well as campaign managers, speechwriters, and other handlers. And the fight for votes is no joke. Yeah, it's for a grade, but also bragging rights. That means making campaign commercials, developing a social media strategy, and understanding a candidate's platform down to the fine print.
I'm spending hours on John Kasich's website just reading through his fact sheets, reading through exactly what he says. We're not making any of this up. It's exactly what the candidates say.
In becoming the Ohio governor, Senior Marianne Cosgrove applied the same sort of dogged attention to detail that got her accepted to Yale.
Because the other campaigns could fire statistics at us that came out of nowhere. And we're like, I didn't know that. And you don't want to be stuck or frozen like that on the debate stage.
You can be critical of their position, but then you follow up with, here's how my candidates got it right.
Steve Gilligan is the AP government teacher.
Any questions that are good for the group? Okay, period's yours. Thank you.
He says it's not just his class that gets swept up in the horse race.
Pretty much takes over the entire school. In fact, you walk down the hallway and you hear people say, you know, I'm for Kasich, or where's Bernie Sanders? Why isn't he here?
So where are the Democrats? Here's how debate organizer Alexis Riddick broke it down to the very liberal student body before an event in the auditorium.
Allowing you to listen to ideas that you already know and agree with does not encourage political efficacy.
Still, internal polling done during the week-long campaign put Kasich, seen as the establishment moderate in the real race, as the odds-on favorite. As for Trump...
This is a beautiful crowd, like really attractive. And I think I would know, you know, I did own Miss Universe for a while.
At the campaign kickoff event, Fiona Bardoshi wore a red Make America Great Again hat and exuded the tycoon's unflappable confidence.
We are losing. And try as they might, no one else can fix the things we are losing at.
Like all the campaigns, hers honed in on how to frame their candidates' views to best fit their audience. So let's talk about 50-foot-high border walls and more on curbing the defense budget.
And so actually a couple kids told me today, like, surprisingly, I agree with that. Okay, I can see where he's coming from.
Cruz staffer Saruti Beckman was not swayed at all by Trump, or any of the candidates for that matter. For her, the real takeaway is being able to talk a good game against conservative friends and family come November.
And to just have all of their facts, like, in a book, being ready to just, like, talk about at any point, any topic, to be able to pull out an argument and be like, look, this is the actual policy, this is what we're doing, this is what we're comparing it to.
Just like in the real race, money, of course, can make a huge difference. The campaigns that can afford the best food draw the best crowds. In theory, each campaign is capped at $125, money that comes out of their own or their parents' pockets. But that's for hard money purchases, things like plates, napkins, or store-bought food. Ingredients that are altered in any homemade way count as soft money, which has no limits. David Ludwig is a Cruz campaign manager.
If we somehow prepare it in any way, shape, or form, if we cut the fruit and put it in a cup, if we toast the bread,
apply whipped cream to waffles,
whatever, it counts as soft money.
Cruz speechwriter Owen Fox says, yes, that's a ridiculous distinction.
Silly, but it's what you have to do, you know, and I think that's equivalent to candidates having to do whatever it takes to fundraise, even if it means compromising their beliefs.
By Election Day, the candidates felt it was anyone's race to win. But as the class tallied the results, a clear winner emerged.
Kasich. Kasich.
Garnering 60% of the vote, Cosgrove, as Kasich, offered a modest victory speech, one fit for a second semester senior who's already got her college ticket punched.
I am planning to wear sweatpants and a nice sweatshirt tomorrow. I've been in pantsuits for a week, and I'm very excited to no longer be in pantsuits and button-up shirts.
In this race, Cruz came in second, Trump a close third. That may not reflect what actually happens in Pennsylvania's primary, but then again, if Masterman students had their way in the 2014 gubernatorial primary, Tom Wolf would be just another millionaire driving a Jeep. Kevin McCrory, WHYY News.
And that's all for tonight's show. NewsWorks Tonight is produced by Shai Ben-Yaakov and Kimberly Haas, with additional production today from Brett Rader. With Passover approaching, we'll talk tomorrow with author Roger Horowitz about the history of and growing interest in kosher food. Thanks for joining us. I'm Dave Heller for NewsWorks Tonight.